Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Chapter 22. Andy Gets Lucky. We pulled up in front of Andy's new abode just before 7 o'clock. It certainly was not the opulent spread that Bill Gates built in Bellevue with a bowling alley, a home theater, and a basketball court. But to Andy, it was like Graceland. C knocked on the door and then opened it slightly. The TV was on.
Andy, you here?
C called out. Come on in, Andy called back. We walked in and Willow headed straight for Andy, who was sitting on a mattress in front of the TV, picking at the sores on his feet. Willow, Andy exclaimed as she hopped on his lap and patted his hand for him to pet her. I've missed you, he said. After just a few strokes down her back from Andy, Willow turned and headed for his feet and started licking in earnest. She's a healer, isn't she? Andy was smiling. Yes, she is, I replied. I don't think she can fix these feet, though, said Andy, looking at them. I should have changed my socks more often.
Speaking of socks, C interrupted, I've got your socks in Richard's van. I'll go get them.
He headed for the door.
It's good to see you too, Richard, said Andy.
Where have you been?
I started rambling on about how I had been here and there as I took stock of the room. There was a large picture window with a view over the water, and I could see the Manette Bridge in the distance. It was a big room with hardwood floors. It must have been a stately place in its day. It had been remodeled with textured white walls, but I could picture pretty flowered wallpaper and a large chandelier hanging from the high ceilings, an ornate sofa and love seat, oriental rugs, maybe a Victorola, oak chairs with hand-carved legs, and paintings fashionably displayed. The fireplace was covered over now, and the red bricks painted white, and the white walls were bare. Andy had all he needed. Beside his mattress, he had a carton of Marlboros, 2 Bic lighters, a big ashtray, a pair of broken eyeglasses held together with duct tape, and several books, including The Penal Colony, Sons and Lovers, The Bonfire of the Vanities, Humboldt's Gift, and the Bible, and a big bottle of Smirnoff, half empty.
This is a nice place you have here, Andy, I said.
I like it, he replied. I can relax here. It's the old Gates mansion, you know. The granddaddy of the richest man in the world lived here. There was a vague smile on his face, the irony not lost on him. C returned, carrying Andy's socks.
I got these Hershey bars you wanted, he said, dropping the socks on the floor and handing Andy a small plastic bag.
Andy reached in and pulled out 2 plain Hershey bars.
Good, no nuts. I hate nuts.
Turning to me, he added, last time he brought me back Hershey's with nuts. Willow's tongue was hanging from her mouth, worn out from licking Andy's feet.
You need some water, C said to her, and headed for the kitchen.
He took a dirty bowl out of the pile of dishes in the sink, quickly cleaned it, filled it with water, and brought it back to Willow, who lapped it up as fast as she could. I noticed Andy's not-quite-supercuts hairdo. It was much shorter on one side than the other and uneven in the back as well.
I see you got a haircut, I commented.
Yeah, C caught it a couple of days ago, Andy said.
Boy, I really needed it. My hair was getting all stringy, but it feels better now.
How does it look? He asked.
Great,
I lied.
Andy spotted C eyeing the television remote, and he slowly reached out and gripped it tightly.
I got cable, Richard, he said. I never had cable before. I get 80 channels.
But you have to keep this, holding up the remote, away from C. Every time he comes over, he flips around too much. He watches 5 minutes of SpongeBob, 5 minutes of The Iron Chef, 5 minutes of the History Channel.
Come on, Andy. Give me the remote, pleaded C.
No way, C. It's almost time for Wheel of Fortune, said Andy, switching to Channel 4.
Well, it's good to see you so feisty today, C said. Yesterday you were so weak you couldn't even push those remote buttons, he laughed.
Andy picked up his patched-up glasses, slipping them on just as the show began. Pat Sajak was just walking on stage, arm in arm with the queen of all game shows, Vanna White. There she is, Vanna, said Andy. He lit up a Marlboro and coughed as he took a deep drag. As the crowd cheered, Vanna walked across the stage to her position before the huge blue and white puzzle board. That's my girlfriend. When I go to heaven, that's what I want. I want a Vanna White. Pat was introducing and making small talk with the three contestants, Wendy, a dental hygienist from Riverton, Utah, Michael, a banker from Bakersfield, California, and Judy, a cashier at Walmart in Toledo, Ohio, when Andy looked at me and asked, Richard, do you think I'll go to heaven?
Have you been good, Andy? I teased. He laughed. No. Then he reached for his glass beside the mattress. With shaking hands, he picked up the bottle of vodka and poured until his glass was nearly full, spilling a little on his trousers.
Would you like some? He asked, handing the bottle out toward me.
Well, I'm sure you're going to heaven anyway, I said, taking the bottle from his hand.
Yes, I'll take a short one.
I'll take a glass, too, C added, as I headed for the kitchen to get glasses.
I found two in the sink and washed them and returned just as one of the contestants won the first toss-up round by quickly identifying the phrase, Your chariot awaits, chalking up $1,600. The audience supplied polite applause.
That's a good start, Wendy, said Pat. Now for our second toss-up round. The subject is animal. It's two words and nine letters.
Quirky music played loudly as the letters appeared on a small puzzle board near the players.
Okay, Wendy.
King Cobra, Wendy said. Pat saluted her. You have won $1,900. The crowd applauded. As I poured two vodkas straight up, Pat pushed the game along and the three of us were pulled into the glittering world of the Hollywood soundstage, intrigued for a moment by the lives of total strangers playing a game of chance. Andy moaned crap when one player inevitably lost her accumulated winnings by landing on bankrupt, but he was really more enthralled by the hostess than anything.
She has the legs of a goddess, he murmured.
Actually, millions of minds across the nation were captivated as they worked to solve the puzzle of the moment from their own couches or mattresses. In that way, television is the new great equalizer. Subject, fun and games. Eight words. Slowly, consonants and vowels begin to appear in odd places on the puzzle board. We were all rooting for one contestant or another while trying to win ourselves. Would the Wheel of Fortune be kind to this Walmart cashier?
Andy leaned forward and squinted. I got it, he said, enjoying wine and cheese at the sidewalk cafe. Come on, Judy.
On the screen, Judy swallowed hard and looked at Pat.
I'd like to solve it, she said.
She was holding her hands together as if she was praying as she ventured her best guess.
Enjoying wine and cheese at a sidewalk cafe?
You've got it.
Pete cheered as the final letter spun into place, lights flashed, and the camera quickly panned to Vanna's smile. The crowd rose to its feet, and Judy cheered. Not surprisingly, the big prize that day included the big meal deal trip to Paris, worth almost $6,000.
See, see, exclaimed Andy. I could be going to Paris right now if I was on that show.
You were right, C said, and you got it first.
The wheel went to a commercial break, and I could tell C was getting bored. He wasn't one to participate in this kind of mindless escapism for long. For someone like Andy, though, whose isolated life on the streets stretched from endless days into endless weeks, months, and years, having a home at last and a TV with a remote was a powerful experience and the ultimate in entertainment. C reached over to pick up one of Andy's books, and Andy recoiled with the remote.
I thought you were going for this, he laughed. Don't even think about it.
No, I don't want your stupid remote, C chided. Can I read this?
He held up The Fortress of Solitude by Jonathan Lethem.
Sure, said Andy. It's good.
C picked his pipe out of his pocket and said,
I'm going in the bedroom to read for a while.
C was like that. He liked to be alone, smoking his pipe and reading with the noise of people nearby or in the background. I decided to hang out with Andy. A commercial for Viagra was just ending as my attention returned to the tube. A glowing woman was embracing her smiling man, and the announcer was reading the medicine's warnings. Blah, 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 and if your erection continues for longer than 4 hours, consult your doctor. Yeah, right, chortled Andy. Can you imagine calling a doctor at midnight and saying, Doctor, my hard-on won't go down? I laughed. You ever had a hard-on for 4 hours, Richard? I was just taking a sip of vodka and almost choked. I laughed so hard tears were rolling down my cheeks. Andy continued, I guess I could call 911. I slowly recovered as the wheel moved into the jackpot round. Wendy was on a roll and piled up $4,300 in winnings on lucky spins. There are no V's, said Pat, his voice trailing off. Andy appeared to be getting tired. He took a big slug of vodka and then lay back down on his side. I'm going to check on C, I said, lifting myself off the floor. Willow had fallen asleep on the mattress at Andy's feet. I found C sitting cross-legged on the floor, puffing on his pot pipe and reading the book he had borrowed from Andy. Good book? I asked.
I don't know yet, he responded. I'm just getting into it.
He took his finger and tapped down the smoke in his pipe and then hit the bud with his lighter. He took a big hit, held it, and finally exhaled.
It's about a young boy who's the only white kid in his Brooklyn neighborhood, C said, holding up the book. He has to hide his lunch money in his socks, but he still gets yoked every day. It's got possibilities.
The smell of marijuana filled the room, and C was getting mellow. We could hear Andy yelling, Diamonds are a girl's best friend! It's diamonds are a girl's best friend, you dummy!
He's relaxed here, C said of Andy. It's about time he had a place to call home. I tried to stop in every day, at least for a bit, to check on him. He wasn't good the last couple of days. He could barely make it to the bathroom and couldn't even sit up. He just lay on his side. I made him a soup and a sandwich. He paused, thinking back on the last few days. He's all worn out. The doctors at the clinic know Andy. They are afraid to give him any strong pain medication because he drinks so much. But he seems better tonight.
It was nice to meet Adam and those kids today, I said, changing the subject. Thanks for asking me along.
You're welcome, C said. It's sad to see them living in the woods, but they're better off there. Maria, one of the girls, came home one night after working a double shift at the mall and got in the shower. Her dad climbed in with her and raped her. She ran away that night after her father fell asleep. She's 16, I think she said. Then there's Gentry. He got into trouble at school. I don't know the whole story, but he appears to be the rebellious type, whatever that is. Anyway, he said school was boring and he quit. He got a job doing construction for some guy. After he spent 2 weeks putting up drywall 8 hours a day, the guy didn't pay him and they got into an argument. The boss said he was fired, and Gentry pushed him. So the guy whipped out his cell phone and called the cops. Gentry ran off. He said he found out later that the boss does that to kids all the time.
That's terrible, I said.
It happens, C shrugged. What's a kid to do? And Adam, well, Adam was at the wrong place at the wrong time. He got picked up for smoking a joint in a park down by the water in Port Angeles. He has a long hair, has a medallion with a leather strap around his neck, and wears sandals all the time. He looks like he just arrived from the 60s in a time machine. Adam has a quick wit, and he admits he said something the cop may have construed as insulting, or they might have let him go. But they busted him and took him to jail.
TV sounds drifted in from the living room. We are going into the mystery round. Are you ready?
Andy must have turned up the volume a notch.
Adam told C he had been waiting in his cell when three policemen came in carrying a young guy who was screaming.
I'm from Texas. You can't do this to me. I'll whip your ass.
Things got out of control as they tried to put the guy in a cell. They sprayed him in the face with pepper spray, took off all of his clothes, hog-tied him with a homemade rope, put a hood over his head, and left the guy naked, bleeding, and unconscious on the cell floor. Then one of the cops looked at Adam and said, "You'd better be quiet or we'll give you some of that." And they left. Adam sat in his cell while the man bled to death. Eventually, Adam's dad bailed him out. Adam was afraid to tell his parents what he had seen, and the next day he just took off. He stopped here and has been here ever since that day 2 years ago, living in fear in the woods. There was an article in the paper a month or two ago that said the county paid the family of the Texas man $1.6 million in the settlement of excessive force case, C said. It was a federal lawsuit, but Adam can't go home. Not one of the officers was fired. He is still afraid. Adam's story frightened me. What would I have done if I had been in his shoes? I wondered what would happen to the kids when summer ended and the weather turned. There were hundreds of young people like Maria, Gentry, and Adam living in forests and old abandoned houses, praying their parents and the police don't find them. From the living room, I heard the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do jingle and the TV announcer saying, "This is Jeopardy!" Willow came into the room and sat down in front of me. Then she whined and looked at the door. "Do you have to go outside, Willow?" I said to her, getting up. Willow was the first one out the bedroom door, and I followed, glancing as the TV Jeopardy host Alex Trebek was introducing one of the contestants. As I headed for the front door to let Willow out, she headed back to Andy instead and lay down on the floor. "Come on, girl," I said. But she just lay there. It was then that I noticed Andy's overturned glass and a small pool of vodka on the floor. His eyeglasses were also on the floor, and Andy was lying motionless. I walked closer as C came out of the bedroom. "It looks like Andy spilled his drink," I said. C picked up the glass, knelt down, and looked at Andy. "Oh, no," was all he said. He picked up Andy's hand and held it, searching for a pulse. Then he put his ear to Andy's chest, but Andy's body was limp. C reached up and gently closed Andy's eyelids and looked up to me. "Andy has passed on," he said softly. "What?" I was stunned. "Andy died, Richard," he said. I was in shock and began to tremble, but C was like a physician at the bedside of an old friend who had just taken his last breath. "It's okay, Richard," he said, seeing my distress. "It's been coming. It was time." He moved Andy's arms across his chest and then took a blanket and gently pulled it over him. I had never been this close to death before. Even when my mother and father died, I had not been at their bedsides. My mind began to process what had just happened. Andy the Weed had died. He had finally gotten a place to live, a bed, and a TV. He died on his own time, just like he wanted. After 16 years of sleeping on hard benches, in dumpsters, under cars, and in doorways, Andy went to sleep for the final time on the same living room floor that William Gates III might have played on as a child. Andy left over $63,000 behind in the bank, the remainder of the money he had waited for and needed all those years on the street. C, still kneeling, clasped his hands, said a brief personal prayer, and then looked at me, grinning slightly. "Well, I'll bet Andy's already in heaven, under the sheets with a woman who looks like Vanna White," he said. There was no phone in the apartment. "Would you give me a ride up to the payphone by the ferry terminal?" C asked. "Sure," I said. "I'll call the landlord," he said. "His number is on the fridge." He walked toward the kitchen. "He'll need to know about Andy, and then I'll come back and see what needs to be done." "I'll be glad to help," I said. "Good, thanks." We called the landlord. The paramedics came to pick up Andy for the last time. I took C back to the Armadillo. I gave C a hug before he climbed into his home, and as always, he held up two fingers and said, "Peace, be safe." I drove the van to the Methodist Church parking lot, where we had been sleeping for the past week, and quickly began preparing our bed for the night. It had been a long day in my homeless world. The pastor of the church was working late in his office, and the light illuminated the van. He walked to the window and waved to Willow and me. We waved back. The wind was picking up as Willow and I climbed into the back of the van once again. I struggled into my sleeping bag, and Willow pawed impatiently for me to join her. Then she ducked under the covers and jockeyed for a warm and comfortable spot. Lying on my back, I put my hands behind my head. The gusting winds were causing the tall fir trees beside the church to sway. The light from the pastor's office shone through them and created shadows that looked like mammoth wings slowly moving up and down. I thought of the kindness of C and the things he had done for Andy. C had paid it forward for Andy. With very little, C had done something very big, something I would not have done. When everybody else had given up and considered Andy just a charming nuisance who was drunk all the time, urinating on himself, C picked him up and cleaned him off and restored his grace and dignity. The two established a graceful esprit de corps, doing little things like washing socks and getting candy bars without nuts. Andy did his best to do what he could in return. The last few months of Andy's life were better than the preceding 16 years, because of C. And I considered that dreadful thing I feared the most now, the future. Would I end up living like Andy? I asked myself. When my van finally broke down, would I then have to sleep in a doorway? Would I drink all day just to subdue any hope or dream I might have? Would Willow be able to survive? Or would she get killed just trying to stay with me? I was tired of thinking. It was time to rest. I closed my eyes and rolled over on my side. "Ouch," I said, feeling a sharp pain on my hip. I reached down to rub the pain and felt the two hard objects in my pocket. They were the lucky rocks Katie had given me at Sally's that morning. I fished the rocks out of the pocket of my jeans and held them up to the window. I noticed that they sparkled in the light that was streaming in, and I slowly rubbed them together. "This first rub is for Andy," I whispered. I held the rocks tightly in my hand until I fell asleep. That's tonight's episode. At this point, we must break off our reading. You've been hearing Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Copyright 2009. It is read with the permission of Skyhorse Publishing of New York. Join us next time on the bookshelf for Breakfast at Sally's. The bookshelf is produced and edited by Vern Windham. I'm Jeff Hazen.